Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms both in the system and within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and I'm happy today to be speaking with Ann Fagan Ginger. Ann Fagan Ginger is the founder and executive director of the Micklejohn Civil Liberties Institute here in Berkeley, California. And it started in 1965, and Ann has been working so hard since that time, and I'm sure before that time, and with all the helps that she can get, to basically stand up for our civil liberties and pay attention to those things. And certainly in these days, Ann, and I want to welcome you.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
We all have more than we can handle to keep track of our civil liberties because they are going. So I just like to let the audience know what the Micklejohn Civil Liberties Union has been doing about this, because it's just really horrendous. And a lot of people don't even understand that. A lot of people do, but a lot of people don't.
Well, in the first place, it's not the Micklejohn Civil Liberties Union. It's the Micklejohn Civil Liberties Institute, and there is a difference from the ACLU, and one of the differences is worth mentioning from the beginning. A lot of people aren't thinking about the fact that a treaty is part of the supreme law of the United States. And so the United Nations Charter, which is a treaty we ratified, is part of the law actually of the United States. And so are three other treaties that we've ratified. So it isn't just that George Bush and his cohorts can do whatever they want to, because the American people will permit this, even though it violates the U.S. Constitution. It also violates the U.N. Charter and these other treaties, and the world is watching. And I think that's one difference between Micklejohn and a lot of other organizations, that we are clear that Article 55 of the U.N. Charter is as much a promise by the U.S. government as the First Amendment. And since the Patriot Act was adopted, since 9/11, federal and state and local government officials and individuals have been violating the First, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, Seventh, Eighth, 14th Amendments, the Bill of Rights and the Reconstruction Amendments in this country. And also, they have been violating the promise the United States made to all other countries when we ratified the UN Charter that we would promote universal respect for and observance of fundamental human rights and freedoms for all, and that we would promote full employment and higher standards of living and solutions of economic and educational issues. And these are all promises that the U.S. made other nations sign when they signed the charter, and that the U.S. also signed. And so I think if we can stop thinking that we are only the United States living in the United States, we are people living in this particular place. We also, and we don't like to admit it, the U.S. has military bases on more than 130 countries. And every time there's a U.S. military base, whether on Guantanamo Bay or anywhere else, that piece of property, which the U.S. government is in charge of, is governed by the U.N. Charter and by the U.S. Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ann Fagan Ginger, you're an attorney, and you've been doing this for a long time, and you seem to really have faith in these documents. I'm just to have to share that I'm feeling so kind of cynical, I guess, and you just hang in and keep doing this work and thinking that these promises mean something and or should mean something. So I really admire that, and I'd like you to, if you would, to talk a little bit about that, because I imagine that I'm not the only person feeling this way who's listening to this program. And of course, you just mentioned Guantanamo Bay, and we know that there are, I guess it's probably hundreds, maybe not over 1,000 anymore, of people locked up there with no charges, no jury, no judge, no nothing, and also tortured. And the United States says that they don't have to pay any attention. They're going to, like, execute people, have military tribunals. It's just like the worst of what we've always heard about. Only happens in other countries. Of course, the United States is often behind it, but it only happens in other countries. It's not the United States that directly does this. So how do you keep your spirits up here?
Well, I don't think it's a question of having faith in the documents, and I don't think it's a question of being cynical. I think that these documents were not won by some easy method. Somebody didn't sit down in a law professor's office or at a town meeting and say, we need a Bill of Rights. People said, we will overthrow the King of England. We will take on a power that is as great in that era as the United States was, let's say, before nuclear weapons, comparable. And the people in this country said, we will overthrow the king. We will overthrow the idea of a star chamber. We will write it, and then we will write it on a piece of paper, and we will demand that our government officials obey. So there's nothing to be gained by being cynical. And if you study history, you will find that the people in the United States rise up. They may not do it often enough. They may not always do it wisely. But over a period of time, the people of the United States will not stand for a dictatorial attitude or a racist attitude. And one of the sorrows that I have and angers is that the media did not pick up on a very important series of events that happened in the 1990s. In 1992, the United States Senate ratified a document called the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. And in that document, the United States government agreed to make a report every 5 years to the UN Human Rights Committee on every aspect of political and civil rights in this country, including the right to organize a union, the rights of women, the rights of children, all the political rights that are being violated by the Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Department Act. And we made an agreement with the rest of the world that we would make a report every 5 years. In 1994, the Senate ratified two treaties, and they have very interesting names. One is the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. Now, that's a big name. It goes beyond the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, and it specifically says that positive steps must be made, which is another word for affirmative action. And the U.S. signed that treaty, and the Senate ratified it by a two-thirds vote. And in 1994, the U.S. Senate ratified something called the Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment. Again, we promised to make a report to a U.N. committee every 4 years. Now, these promises are not nothing, because we expect other nations which have signed these treaties to obey them, and a member of the U.S. government is appointed to sit on these committees, or somebody is appointed. They're a professor. It's a part-time job. But they are people appointed by the U.S. government, and they sit on these committees, which meet in Geneva, and go over the record of every single country in the world that has ratified. So it's not just a question of our violating or government officials violating. It's a question of the media has an affirmative duty to report on these treaties the same way we report on SARS, or on a medical problem, or certainly the same way we report on a baseball game. It's time that the media specifically said, in the eyes of the world, George Bush is not king of the United States, and even if the people of the U.S. let him, he's not king of the world. And Rumsfeld is not the head of a military machine that has the legal authority to do whatever it wants with nuclear weapons. And the other basic media flaw in the 1990s was to ignore an opinion of the International Court of Justice that ruled that nuclear weapons are illegal, against the law, all nuclear weapons, because they violate certain fundamental principles. And the U.S. judge agreed with this. This was a unanimous vote by the International Court of Justice, which is one of the big six organs of the U.N., and the judges from each of the nuclear weapons countries, China, Russia, France, the United Kingdom, and the U.S. all agreed with the others that nuclear weapons are illegal. Now, when the media fails to talk about these treaties and about this opinion of the court day after day, year after year. The media has actually not only a right to find out what the news is, they actually have a duty to let the people know what is happening. And this is clear in the UN documents. They were written almost 200 years after the U.S. Bill of Rights. And so they not only talk about rights, they also talk about duties. And it is the duty of every nation to do certain things, as well as rights. It's the duty of the people, and it's the duty of the media. And the coverage of the United Nations is very, very inadequate in the U.S. That's not true in the rest of the world. The U.N. is not nothing. It is saving the lives of hundreds of children per day. It is causing schools to be open every day, per day. It is dealing with health problems every day. These are not nothings. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the people of the U.S. do not know about this makes us ignorant, and we make mistakes.
Yeah. Well, it comes back so often to the media and that people aren't informed. So it's not surprising. And, of course, there's many people in the power who are not very crazy about the United Nations, that's for sure, these days. So it's not too surprising. But here we are on the media, and I'd be very interested to know and to let the audience know what the Mikkeljohn Civil Liberties Institute has been doing about this. Sorry about that, calling it union. It just, like, slipped out. I didn't even notice it.
No, that's fine. It happens all the time. Well, the Mikkeljohn has a new project, which is a continuation of an old project. We've just written a letter to Catherine Grove, who is the person in the State Department who's in charge of filing the reports that are owed under these three treaties. And we're overdue on all three. We are delinquent. And so we wrote a letter to her, registered, return receipt requested, and we got a return receipt, so we know she got it. And we sent her five pages, and we said, under the law, you are required, the United States is required, to file these reports. So when are you going to file them? And what are you going to say in your report about the Patriot Act, about the Homeland Security Department Act, about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, about a whole series of executive orders by the President, a whole series of Attorney General's orders? What are you going to say about these to the committee that is in charge of enforcing the treaties by reporting? And before we wrote her the letter, putting it all in writing, we called her, one of our interns. We have summer law school interns who come here. And he called and talked to her, and she said, well, so much has happened since 9/11, we don't have a budget to make this report. Now, really, come off it. That is not an acceptable answer from the richest country in the world. She also said, we have no power to cause state and local governments to make reports. Now, again, I'm not saying whether the State Department has that power, but since a treaty is part of the supreme law of the land, and since the Constitution specifically says that state judges must obey treaties, it's explicit, federal and state, then it is the responsibility, if not of the State Department, then of some other department to see to it that local and county and state agencies make reports. Now, the reason I mention this is not just because it happens to be the law, but if the people in Oakland went to the mayor and said, Mr. Brown, your city has a duty to make a report to the United Nations about police misconduct, about the misuse of weapons to protesters, about the violations of the concept of an equal public education for every child, regardless of economic or race or national origin, of the responsibility to have clean streets and a method that poor people can afford to live in Oakland. And you have a duty to make that report to the United States government so it can turn it in to the government to the UN committee. That would make a difference in how Oakland behaved. And the same would be true in Oklahoma City or in Houston or in New York City or anywhere else. And the reality is that I did ask the city of Berkeley to do this, as the committee, the Peace and Justice Commission of the city of Berkeley, asked the city of Berkeley to do this in 1994. And they agreed. So the Commission on the Status of Women, the Commission on Youth, the Police Review Board, all of these groups actually made reports, which we submitted to the United States State Department, which they ignored. But these are the kinds of reports that ordinary people in every city and county, you can go to your county board of supervisors and say, here is a copy of these three treaties. You have a duty to make a report, because the first report that the U.S. has already made can be at the federal level only. But thereafter, they are required to be at the state and local level. And I really have to tell you that this isn't just a bunch of words. In Australia, there was serious criticism by the UN committee of the treatment of Aboriginal people in Australia that came up as a result of this kind of a report. And Australia changed its laws as a result. Canada had serious problems with the way that they were treating Native people in Canada, and it came out in the report. And Canada changed its laws as a result. And we found that 23 out of 28 countries that we studied had changed their laws as a result of the reporting. Now, I know you can say, well, you change the law and it doesn't mean anything. That's not quite true. It depends. The step of demanding the change is a step. The step of getting the law rewritten. And then, of course, you have to be vigilant and go down to the city council or the town hall or wherever it is and demand that the new law be enforced. But this idea of changing the way people are treated by government officials is critical, particularly at this time.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I was just hearing you speak, Ann Ginger, I'm feeling less cynical than I was at the beginning of the interview. Because, of course, it's just absolutely true that we have to stand up for ourselves and not be basically pushed around by this government that's in power now. And this is in, what do they call it, freedom is a constant struggle. It doesn't stop. It takes participation. And in terms of participation, you know, I realize that some people don't even know what the Patriot Act is. I don't know about the listeners to this program, but I was speaking to somebody just the other day, and I was very surprised. This is a person I had just met, but that she was pretty, at least informed as the average person, didn't really have any sense of the oppressiveness of these acts, the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security, and whatever. So maybe you'd like to say a little bit about that, and then what is happening? Because I know some good things are happening in the United States in terms of cities standing up.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Patriot Act is 250 pages long, and it was written over decades, and it's important to understand that. And the Congress passed it within a few days after Bush frightened them because of the events that happened in New York and Washington into passing something without reading it. And Congressman Kucinich is now proposing a Benjamin Franklin Real Patriot Act. That's what he's going to propose in September, which would repeal most of the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act says it is okay to detain people. It is okay to require them to register. And it's okay to require people from certain nations or religions to register, which is an absolute violation of the 14th Amendment concept of no discrimination based on race, and the First Amendment, no discrimination based on religion. And it permits prison guards to behave in a way toward detainees. It permits the brutal attack on the lives of anybody who isn't a U.S. citizen. And that includes people who are here with a valid visa, people who are here on a valid work permit, people who are here who have applied for political asylum. These new laws, both the Patriot Act, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and the directives by the Attorney General and the executive orders of the President, abolish the concept that a person is entitled to use the First Amendment. And I really want to remind everybody, the First Amendment doesn't say citizens only have the right to free speech or freedom of religion. It applies to everyone. And it doesn't say that only a citizen, a person born in the U.S., has a right to no unreasonable search and seizure or to no being arrested. And I should tell you that a citizen of Canada living peacefully in the U.S. but protesting the war in Afghanistan was arrested and taken to prison while his application for permanent status in the U.S. was pending. and he had committed terrible crimes. He drove without a proper auto driver's license, and he drove a car that didn't have a proper license. And for that, in the middle of the night, the guards in Bristol County, Massachusetts, took him to a dental chair, strapped him in, and a dentist removed four teeth of a perfectly healthy man and left him bleeding and in terrible trouble. And the only possible excuse was that he was a terrorist. No proof, no nothing. And then they deported him.
That's torture, huh?
That's torture. And this is not the only example. The people, obviously, I think your friend who may not have heard of the Patriot Act probably has heard of Guantanamo Bay. And it is a piece of property which at this point is in the control of the United States government. And every piece of property in the control of the United States government is governed by the United States Constitution, which includes the Bill of Rights, which includes the 4th, 5th, 6th, and all these amendments that say people have certain rights, and it is governed by the United Nations Charter. And there's nothing that the president can say about detainees or anything else that will change the fact that no head of any government in the world in the 21st century has the legal right to violate the Constitution of his own country or of the United Nations. And that is what the Bush administration is doing. And they're saying to us, it will make us safer from terrorists. And anyone who has talked to anyone from any country in the world will tell you, the U.S. is more hated today than it was before these acts occurred. Nothing that the U.S. is doing in the U.S., in Guantanamo Bay, in Afghanistan, in Kosovo, or in Iraq, nothing the U.S. is doing is decreasing the threat to the people of the U.S. On the contrary, the steps the U.S. government is taking is building absolute hatred and contempt for people, for the United States government, by people all over the world.
Well, I'm going to put my own two cents in here. I take responsibility for what I'm saying. It's not you saying this. Actually, I've been looking into a lot of what really happened with September 11th, and there's a huge amount of evidence that it's very different than the official story. And I'm glad that you mentioned, Anne Fagan Ginger, that the Patriot Act was written long before 9/11 happened. And so this whole issue of blaming things on terrorists, and especially brown-skinned terrorists, and playing on racism and playing on fear to just push things through, when we don't even know if there actually were any terrorists for sure. There's a lot of things that the government's saying that are not clear, and we don't have to discuss this a bunch, but I just wanted to take this opportunity to say this because I know it's very controversial, but I'd like to just really urge people, as they're listening to this show, to look also in, you know, deeply into these kinds of issues, because it's so much is kept from us, as you've been saying, by the media, and so people can't really make very informed decisions when they don't have information.
Well, I think that one of the interesting facts is that the Patriot Act, like every other statute, must contain an inspector general system. And so there has been an inspector general's report under the Patriot Act. They themselves are now saying they only studied two areas, both in the East Coast, which is totally wrong for an inspector general. But the inspector general says that the laws of the United States are being violated by government officials, prison guards, and police since the Patriot Act was adopted. He himself is having to say this. The question of what the government knew and when they knew it before 9/11 is a major question, and Institute is not going into it. We are going into the question of what now is the method by which foreign intelligence is being collected and used. We now all know that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. There weren't even biological and chemical weapons, and there was no tie to Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Therefore, the entire military attack on Iraq was based on falsehoods. And that is a major violation. It is a profound violation of every oath that the government officials took when they swore that they would uphold the Constitution. And I think that we have to turn quickly to become more politically active and more wisely politically active than we have been.
How about impeachment?
I think that the question of impeachment, there is no doubt that there are grounds for impeachment. My own approach is that if you can't find a Congress member willing to bring an impeachment petition, the more important thing in California is to figure out how to vote October 8th in the recall election, how to vote in 2004 for president, how to commit every single candidate of every party that you can get to say that they actually comprehend what's in the First Amendment, that they actually are committed to no discrimination against people because of their religion or their national origin, that they will forbid any government official whom they are dealing with to violate these. I think that that is a better path. Impeachment is perfectly legal, and there are plenty of grounds for it. But the practical thing right now is to convince Dianne Feinstein, our senator, or to convince your senator, whoever that may be, to convince your governor that you will not permit total ignoring of the fundamental principles and standards that were established in the U.S. Constitution. And I think that that will keep us busy. You need to find out how to be effective when you call your Congress member. You need to learn the name of the aide to your Congress member who's in charge of the Patriot Act. Call up your congressman and say, who is in charge of the Patriot Act? I want to talk to that person. Who is in charge of the Guantanamo Bay issue? And talk to the particular aide to the Congress member or senator and say, we will not put up with this. If you want to have a vote from this region, you're going to have to change and do something against what's happening.
Yeah, and people should understand that these, like the Patriot Act and Homeland Security, that can affect anybody, even if you never did a political thing or disagreeing with the government thing in your life. It can still affect you. Nobody is immune from this.
I think that that's true, and I think that that's why, to go back to what we said in the beginning, this is no time to be cynical or to go in your garden. Go in your garden and grow a tomato, one to eat and one to throw it at a person who is violating the Constitution. It's a peaceful act. And I think we have to learn that this is a time when every single person needs to know a minimum of what is happening. You don't have to know every final word. And then demand that the particular official, your mayor, your city council member, your Congress member, will demand that we obey the law.
I feel inspired. I needed some inspiration today, Ann Fagan Ginger. Thank you so much, and let's let people know how to get in touch with the Mickeljohn Civil Liberties Institute.
It's www.mcli.org. Is the MCLI at mcli.org. M is for Mickeljohn Civil Liberties Institute. That's on the web, and our email address is
mcli@mcli.org.
Right.
It's in Berkeley, California. Mickeljohn is spelled M-E-I-K-L-E-J-O-H-N, Civil Liberties Institute.
Right.
So thank you so much, Ann Fagan Ginger.
You're very welcome.
My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.
To order a copy of the program you just heard, write down the following information. The email is sue@suesupriano.com. That's Sue, S-U-E, at Sue Supriano, SUESUPRIANO.com. Or the telephone is 510-883-1979. That's 510-883-1979.